Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, have you heard of the Discog Shuffle?
Yeah, that's what the Bears used to do when they scored a touchdown, right?
Yep, that George Halas could really boogie.
Okay, Patrick, what is it that you always say about our listeners?
If they didn't listen, who would be listening?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Without our listeners, who would listen to the show?
That's right.
Something
like
that.
Or they're smarter than we are.
And then that too. Yeah. Those two things. So, this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And from time to time, we check in with one of our listeners, specifically.
Yeah, we do.
One of our patrons. They're the people who help support the show in other ways too, besides just listening. If you're interested in that, you can go to patreon.com/suburbspod and you can check that out. And one of the things that some people receive for their support is they get to be a guest star on the show every so often.
And I'm looking forward to this, Jim, because I think if there's one of our listeners who, as far as I know anyway, I would drunkenly break into their basement and steal their records, it would be Scott Parks from Valparaiso, Indiana.
Speaking of record collections, it's because I'm sitting here among the Patrick Foster record collection. Do either of you ever get this question from anyone in your family? How do you have time to listen to all those records?
Yeah, right? Occasionally we do.
Well, I haven't yet. The only comment that I've received from anybody in my family is from my wife, and that was maybe about a year ago. And the comment I got was, man, that's a lot of records. And at that point, it was about half what it is now. I don't really think that she understood what was going to happen when she and my kids bought me a turntable in December, for Christmas of 2017. I don't think she really understood what that entailed, but I think she'll figure it out here pretty soon.
You've come a long way, baby.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I remember many years ago when I got married, my mother-in-law took one look at my CD collection, which was, pretty expensive for a guy who was mid to late 20s. And she just said something like, how do you decide which one to listen to?
Well, a good way to do that now is Discog Shuffle. I don't know if you guys ever do that with Discogs. Sometimes I have no idea what I want to play, and I will shake my phone on the Discogs app, and it'll tell me what to play. And, you can't make the Discogs gods mad, so you've got to play what it brings up. I love every record I have in my collection, so it doesn't really matter which one it is. And I pop it on, and from there, usually it goes into something else related to that or something else that pops into my brain.
Yeah, this is a separate podcast, Scott, but that's one of the few good things about the Discogs app. But
I'm not gonna argue with you.
We don't need to go there. Yeah.
What I was going to say here is that Scott gets to pick the topic.
Yes, he
right?
does.
And the topic is not record collections per se, but a certain segment, I think, of his record collection. Is that right, Scott? Is that what
it
you
is.
Want to talk about? Yes.
100%. This directly pertains to the record collecting that I've been doing over the last 6-7 months. This actually ties back to, I'm not even sure if this was a topic on your old show, but I can't get out of my brain that at some point on your old show, Patrick mentioned the Kinks.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about the Kinks, but a specific era of the Kinks, which was not what Patrick was talking about. He mentioned that his favorite Kinks record was a record called Muswell Hillbilly. You guys played a clip of a song, and I'm like, at that point, I was a Kinks, novice. I knew Lola. I knew all day, all the night. I basically knew all the hits, right? But that was it. I didn't know that they had actually then continued to release records for decades that were totally different than those 60s records.
Yep.
So anyway, he mentions Muswell Hillbillies. I get this turntable in December of 2017, and my goal in life was to find Muswell Hillbillies on vinyl. I had listened to it on Apple Music or Spotify, whichever one I was using at that point, and I fell in love with it. But I never really did a deep dive on the Kinks. Fast forward to March of 2019. So 7 months ago, I'm at a local record store and I see a copy of Arthur. Never listened to it. I had never heard any song that I knew at that point from this record. Probably a little bit more than I wanted to buy or pay for a record, but I'm like, it's the Kinks. It's a 50-year-old record. I've got to buy this record. So I buy Arthur. I put it on my turntable, and I'm not joking, from that moment on, I have been hooked on the Kinks. Sweet. So we're talking seven months I've been hooked on the Kinks. I kind of went on a Kinks journey. I have yet to find anything prior to Village Green. So I don't have, unfortunately, I don't have something else. I don't have Face to Face. I don't have Kink Controversy. They're self-titled. I don't have any of those first five. But I have managed to locate almost exclusively in the wild, so purchased at a store, everything from Village Green all the way through Phobia.
Nice.
So I've gone on this Kinks journey. So during this Kinks journey, I found this little small segment of records that was really kind of like crazy near the end of their career. And I guess, you know, from what it sounds like, they might actually be releasing a new record soon. Ray and Dave have talked about recording. They're actually recording. They have stuff they've been working on for years. I guess I've heard that this has happened. They've said this many times. Who knows if it'll come true? But anyway, their last actual studio record was in 93. They've released nothing actual studio since then. But near the end of their career, there was this run of records, six records from 1977 to 1984. And I call it the Arista years. And that's what I would like to talk about today. Sweet. Is the Kinks Arista years.
I'm excited about this because I really like this period of the Kinks and it's a very interesting period.
Well, it's important to me too, because I was working in record stores when these records came out.
Yeah.
And it was like a revitalized Kinks.
It was.
Sounds cool.
It's almost like a different band too.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's the funny thing.
Yeah,
It's almost like they became an American band for a 6 or 7 year stretch of time, because they became more important in America than they ever were in Britain during that period of time.
Totally.
And that's why, you know, nobody knows the Kinks. I didn't know the Kinks because from until 77, nobody in America listened to the Kinks.
Right.
They were not like this popular band like the Beatles and the Stones and the Who.
Right.
One quick thing I want to say before you get into that period of the Kinks, when you mentioned the album Arthur, that
yes.
has my favorite Kinks song.
Really? Which is
Victoria.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. That's such a great song.
I love that song.
When I dropped the needle on that record and that song came up, I'm like, I know this song. I had heard it somewhere. I had no idea. Or it was, I knew it like somehow inside me. It belonged in my brain. It's hard to say. But Arthur, 50-year anniversary, I think is coming up this week. And I know they're releasing that 50-year box set coming up here in another couple weeks. Probably not going to shell out any more money since I already spent too much on the one, but
right.
It is what it is. So,
okay, so how do you want to tackle this Arista period?
Well, I figured we'd just kind of go, you know, record by record. One of the things I love that you guys do, which we can't really, you know, do it in depth like you guys do for a five-day period, but I'd like to kind of touch on each one of those records. You guys usually do one record a day, but I figured we could do all six quickly. I think there's some highlights on each one of these records. They're all similar, but different, and you can kind of see this progression that they make from where they kind of came from the mid 70s, where they were in that theatrical period, to where they ended up in the mid 80s, where they were really more of, I'm not going to say they were new wave, but they actually did go through kind of a new wave period into more of just a pop centric period by the end of this decade. So, or into this period. So I think we'd start with Sleepwalker and just kind of talk about each record if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah, let's do it.
So 1977, they end up signing with the Arista. They were on, I think it was RCA before that. Had some, most people would call them lackluster records. I personally don't think the Kinks have made a bad record, to be honest with you. I have listened to every single one. I own the majority of them, and I love them all. But I do agree that a couple of those records during the mid-70s were a little bit weird. You know, they're basically pretty theatrical and could have been made into movies. Signed to Arista, Clive Davis, I think, basically said to them, stop it. Just be a rock band.
Yeah.
And Ray Davies said, yeah, I'm going to do it. So, you know, they released Sleepwalker in 77. There is some amazing songs in here. I love the title track, Sleepwalker.
When we back up the round, I start to lose my mind.
little bit inappropriate. If you listen to some of the lyrics, it's very cheeky, which, you know, Ray had always been kind of cheeky as it is. But I love that song. Stormy Sky, it, I think, could have potentially been like a James Bond theme song, or at least a song in a James Bond movie. I don't know if you guys know that song that well, but, you know, it could have been some time where he's like with a lady in a plane, you know, doing what James Bond did back in the 70s. Life Goes On, I love that song. It's got a great message. Got a great groove. It's a really good song. But if there's one song on this record that I think makes this record, it's Jukebox Music. It's an awesome rocking song.
Yep.
It's about a woman who only wants to sit alone and listen to her music, which is basically my life dream, is to sit somewhere where I want to be and listen to music. So if there's one song from this, it's Jukebox Music. That does it for me. I don't know what you guys think.
Absolutely. And I'll say this really quick for setup, Scott. Love the way that we're approaching this period. And I totally agree with you. This is one of the most interesting periods of a band that has had many forms, Jim. Just like many, many phases. But prior to this, I think Ray Davies took his love of sort of English music hall and English characters and tried to write, you know, like symphonies and plays,
right,
and all those things. You know, he tried to produce stuff for the stage.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it's interesting because the early Kinks, the British Invasion,
yep,
Kinks,
right,
was kind of garage rock and was
totally
a real rock band,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And, you know, kind of started the whole like riff rock,
oh,
kind of,
absolutely,
thing, and the distortion,
yeah,
with the cut,
yes,
you know, the slicing up the amplifier and all that kind of stuff, right? And those were, you know, some classic songs that stand the test of time, everybody knows. Then, yes, they went into sort of like this sort of inner looking sort of British, yeah, very British band, and kind of delicate, and like you said, it's kind of symphonic and all that kind of stuff. But didn't they also have some issue with like a visa or something like that, and they could not tour the United,
possible,
States?
Yeah, very possible.
For a long time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that was actually like during some of their, you know, I would say their golden period of recording is 66 through 71. Right. So you have Face to Face through Muswell. Yep. You maybe would even put in the one after Muswell. I'm kind of losing the name of it right now. But that 66 to 71, that run of records, I don't know that any band can beat that. And I'm,
yeah,
putting any band. I don't know that the Beatles from Revolver through Let It Be. And I don't think that's better, in my personal opinion. I don't think what the Stones did with Mick Taylor is any better. But they had a problem. They had a visa issue. They could not tour the U.S. And that's why they really weren't that popular. Plus,
right,
they ended up releasing some stuff that was truly British. Like, Americans,
yes,
didn't understand Arthur.
Yeah,
there was nothing on Arthur, yeah, that Americans in 1968 or 1969 would understand.
That's right. So I think going into this Arista Records period that we're talking about now, they had the visa issues resolved so they could tour the United States and make big money there. They had Clive Davis advising them, and they had that, you know, that background of being, like you said, sort of a real rock band. And they were like, hey, we can do now what the Stones have been able to do. Yep. And the Who, obviously, you know, Paul McCartney and Wings, Pink Floyd, all these bands, like, we can go now and be an arena band. And they were totally, like, able to write those kinds of songs. Yep. You know, Ray was able to be like, okay, this is what we're going to be now, and I can do it.
And what's funny is you actually start hearing some of the Who later on. You start hearing maybe some of the Stones. You start hearing some of those things that they weren't like back in the 60s and the early 70s. You start hearing that in these later 70s, early 80s records that I think is what endeared them to American rock fans.
Yeah,
because totally. At that point in time, things were changing. You know, punk was coming in, new wave was coming in, and there was a sector of the United States that was still wanting rock and roll music, and they were kind of losing that.
And just real quickly, because I know we have a lot of ground to cover, if you look at their chart positions, their peak positions for their albums, this is when they had their greatest success in the United States.
Yeah, 100%,
you know, 15 years into their career, right?
And the funny thing is, they were nothing in the UK at this point.
Right. They became an American band, to your point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, after Sleepwalker, they 1 year later, you know, and that's something the Kinks were always good at doing, was releasing records on a regular basis. I think what Sleepwalker is their 15th record, I think. And their first one was in 63, I think. I might be wrong with the dates, but I'm pretty sure Sleepwalker is their 15th. Whatever, they basically released records on a regular basis. Right. So a year later, they released Misfits.
Yep.
This is actually the one that got me into this era. I got this for $3. and that's one thing when you guys are, you know, somebody's wanting to get into records. If you don't have an unlimited budget, you look for the stuff that is cheap. So I think I got all six of these records combined for like $25 or $30. All six of them. Because
the way to do it.
They sold a bunch of them. You just dig in bins. You find them for $3, $4, $2, whatever it is.
Hell yeah.
And they're amazing. So I bought this one for $3, and it's really kind of what put me on the this Arista year bender, where I listened to this, you know, kind of nonstop for a period. So Misfits, 1978, title track is amazing, because really, aren't we all misfits? I mean, if you're not a misfit, then I really don't want to have anything to do with you, because we're all not perfect. In a foreign land. Another life dream of mine would just be to drop everything. And, you know, he says he wants to move to the land of bananas and sand. Who doesn't want to do that?
Right.
Just go live on a beach somewhere. You know, he drops everything in real life, right? Real life is he paid his taxes and he's just going to run away. Love that song. Live Life is great. Out of the Wardrobe, kind of, again, a little cheeky. It's about a man who's, you know, he's not homosexual, but he just likes to dress in women's clothes. Has anybody here seen a chick called Dick? He looks real burly, but he's really hip. He's 6 feet tall and his arms are all brown and hairy. He married Betty Lou back in 65, when you had to be butch to survive. But lately he's been looking at his wife with mixed emotion. You see, he's not a commonplace closet queen. He shouldn't be hidden, he should be seen. 'Cause when he puts
puts on a dress. He looks like a princess. Well, the day came out of the wardrobe.
And it's a great song, and the song talks about how basically him cross-dressing changed his marriage and saved his marriage. So that's a great song. But if I had to pick one, it's a rock and roll fantasy. Basically no words, stone cold classic. You got to make sure when you listen to this song, you get to that the bridge and the chorus. And I absolutely love this song. It's amazing. There's something you ought to know. There's a guy in my block. He lives for rock. He plays records day and night. And when he feels down, he puts some rock and roll on, and it makes him feel alright. And when he feels the world is closing in, he turns the stereo way up high. He just spends his life living in a rock and roll fantasy. He just spends his life living on the edge of reality. He just spends his life in a rock and roll fantasy. He just spends his life living in a rock and roll fantasy. He just spends his life living on the edge of reality. He just spends his life in a rock and roll fantasy.
It really is amazing.
Oh, it is. Yeah, well said, Scott. Yeah.
It's really beautiful song.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. And I'll say this, too, as an addendum to what Scott said, how he summed it up so well. Right around this time, Jim, do you remember the single Father Christmas? It was recorded right around
this time.
Yeah,
that's like my favorite Christmas song.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing, man. And it keeps coming back. It's a great
Christmas
song.
It's one
Christmas
of like
song.
Four that I can actually listen to. And yeah. I am married to a woman who in about, what is today, the 8th in 23 days, 23, 24 days, there'll be Christmas music playing in my
yikes,
house.
Oh, man,
so.
Yeah.
And I've got about four I can listen to, and that's definitely one of them. So next up, 79. Again, 1 year removed from the previous record is Low Budget. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know if there is a more American record that was released in 1979 than a record by a British band called The Kinks. This record basically deals with how hard it was to be alive and be an adult in America in the late 70s with the economy basically being at a, you know, the bottom. You can't buy a gallon of gas. They have a song called Gallon of Gas. They've got a song called Low Budget.
Yep.
I mean, basically nobody had any money. And this band from Britain releases this hard rock record. Like, this is probably the closest that you would consider them to be not heavy metal, but hard rock, hard arena rock. Attitude, you listen to this song and it is so rocking. It's almost punk at certain points, but with a little bit more melody to it. I love Catch Me Now I'm Falling. Pressure is actually a song I could have heard the Ramones doing if they sped it up just a little bit.
Now
great song. But then it's 79. What was big in 79? Disco. What was another right. song from 79 that I think Patrick probably loved in 1979 that I loved as a kid growing up was I Was Made for Loving You by Kiss.
Yeah, man.
And Wish I Could Fly Like Superman. Super. That's basically it's basically I Was Made for Loving You, but by totally. The Kinks instead of
yeah.
Kiss.
Yeah. Same keyboard riff.
Yep,
man.
And that disco beat.
Cigarette and a cup of tea. I looked in the mirror. What did I see? A 9-stone weakling with knobbly knees. I did my knees, bent press ups, touched my toes. Had another sneeze and I blew my nose. I looked in the mirror at my pigeon chest. I had to put on my clothes because it made me depressed.
It starts out exactly the same. The difference, though, is I think the drums kind of hold it down a little bit better in the Kinks song because it feels like it's a real live drum track versus the garbage disco fake
right.
drums.
Right. Well, so, Peter Criss wasn't well at that point.
I wouldn't disagree with you there. So, and then to throw a little bit of slowness on there, a little bit of emotion. I love that song. It is. It's just a fantastic ballad. I just love it. So, low budget, I would say, is again, it's right up there with those first two Arista records. It's one that has a lot of playability, and I really love it. And you know, there's a lot of people that drop the Kinks after Lola, after Muswell, and they're missing out. To be honest with you,
they're totally missing out. I actually don't think Lola is one of their better songs. Honestly, it's all right.
The record is good.
It's not as good as for the attention it gets, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I agree. I think it was more the shock factor.
You're right.
You know, back in totally. 1970, you don't really talk about cross-dressers or transvestites. But I think actually Lola as a whole is really good. I mean, 8-Man, there's not a whole lot. Yeah. There's not many songs better than 8-Man.
Looking right now at their singles, chart positions in this era, and I didn't realize Rock and Roll Fantasy went to number 30, so it was a top 40 hit, and Wish I Could Fly Like Superman just missed it, number 41.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I'll put a shout in for Catch Me Now I'm Falling. I think that's a really good song on that record, too.
I agree. It's a great song.
Yeah. Talking about being prescient about sort of America's predicament, right, Scott? That's like a good one, too, yeah. Totally.
Exactly. And you know what? Some of these songs actually kind of speak true now, 40 years later.
Yeah, they do. I mean, that's the scary thing about it.
There's a lot of stuff in these late 70s records that 40 years later, you would almost assume that somebody wrote them now. So it's crazy. So in 1980, we're not really to talk about it. They did release a live album, double live album. It's good. I like it. I think Arista kind of made them do this to get some of that money from the previous songs and get some of those songs on their record. I like it. I would say of the seven that they released for Arista, it's the worst, just because I'm not a huge live album fan, to be honest with you. So I'm not really going to talk about that one much. But 1981.
Here we go.
They release a record called Give the People What They Want. If I was older than 7 years old in 1981, this is what I would have wanted, because this, I'm going to put this up there with Muswell. I'm going to put this with Village Green. I'm putting it up there with Arthur. I'm putting it up there near the top of all records that the Kinks released. This record from track one to track, 10, is amazing. I love it. I love everything about it. I can't really say that there's more than four or five that like stick out that say these are like their best songs. But as an album as a whole, I love this record.
This is a fantastic album. And I'm just going to say that this came out when I was doing the math here, 14.
Damn.
So okay.
This is prime, you know, learning exactly. about rock and roll,
right.
you know, being a kid. This is like a new band to me
oh,
at
yeah,
this point.
Totally,
you know what
man.
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And they have this hit record
yeah.
and it sounds like everything I want in a, right. in a rock and roll music. You know what I mean? This was huge at the time.
And I'll tell you what, it's like a new band from 2 years before because it doesn't sound anything like low
right.
budget.
Totally,
this
man.
This sounds like new wave. This
yeah.
is basically a new wave record with rock and roll undertones.
Met a girl called Lola and I took her back to my place. Feeling guilty, feeling scared, hidden cameras everywhere. Stop! Hold on. Stay in control.
Ray Davies, I'm telling you what, this guy, he's an amazing songwriter. He knows what people want to listen to. Sometimes he knows what they want to listen to, but it's like too early or too late and that people just don't get it. This
right.
record right here was, it is amazing. I can't tell you what it was like at that point because I wasn't listening to that at that point, but still, I love it. It's awesome.
And the graffiti on the cover
oh,
and
yeah.
everything.
They knew how to spray paint. It was amazing.
Gave
correct.
You the,
gave you the sense of where they were coming from.
Yeah,
it does,
for sure, man.
It does have sort of Ramones-ish kind of feel
totally.
To it.
Upset the administration.
And everybody knew Destroyer. That was
oh,
like
yeah.
sort of the
great song.
Big rock song from the
hell yeah.
that era, right? But when you, as you get older and you sort of have more appreciation for the more the subtleties of the songwriting, I
yeah.
think, you know, I think a song like Better Things is
great
it's
song.
A song I listen to now and
amazing
it's like
song.
It speaks to me at
yeah.
you know 50 what do we say we are late 60s in my late
like
60s early
yeah.
70s now it speaks to me
fantastic for 75
and predictable I think we played
yeah.
that once on this show before about the kind of suburban you know sensibility of it right and then around the dial I mean that could be like Left of the Dial
exactly.
right that's
totally.
Like anthemic
totally.
Sort of song right.
That's actually one that reminded me of the way that I felt when your old show ended. And I'm not joking. This is like me being totally true that you guys ended that show and I felt like I was missing something and I kept looking. Are they going to do something else? Because this show is amazing. And then when I saw that Rock in the Suburbs is coming on and Justin Steiner, he's the one that actually said, hey, did you know they're doing something else? I'm like, yeah, I just saw that. You know, it kind of like, it was exactly like this song. So, I mean, just kind of throw that out there. Like, you guys got me onto the Kinks by that little blurb back in the old days. And then it kind of brings it back around where that song just kind of brings it all to where that's how I felt at that point in time.
That means a lot. Very nice. Man. Thank you.
You know, another killer song on that is Killer's Eyes.
Yes.
Great. It's a great song about a serial killer, and it sounds morbid, but it's such a good song. I love it. And you talk about Destroyer. How many bands steal from not just one of their previous songs, but two of their previous songs,
right. Hell yeah.
And create a song that might be better than either of the other two songs?
Yeah, totally, man.
That does not happen right. Very often.
And how many bands have ripped off all the Kinks riffs and made careers out of it? I mean, you can't even...
Exactly.
That's a whole nother, like, series. You know, the thing about the Kinks for me during this period was the fact that I was in high school, and to your point, Scott, about them being an American band, they toured every year. And they played arenas every year. And that's when I learned about sort of camping out for tickets. Like, they were like my introduction to arena rock. And when you went to see them, they played all the hits and they played a few new songs, but they taught you what a touring band should be.
Well, and that goes back to the live album they released in 80. I mean,
totally,
most of that record,
I love that record.
Most of that record. And again, I don't dislike it. I'm just not a big fan of live records, but most of that record is the stuff that they had released in the previous 3 years. It is mostly new stuff.
And that's why I loved it.
Right. So 81 was given to people. They took a 2-year break. They released probably what I would consider their most American record. And it's their probably the biggest hit that they had in a long time. It's State of Confusion. And, you know, I love the title track, State of Confusion. It's really good. I love the song Property. But if you're going to play one song from this record, there is no other song you can play but Come Dancing.
They put a parking lot on a piece of land where the supermarket used to stand. Before that, they put up a bowling alley on the site that used to be the local pally. That's where the big band used to come and play. My sister went there on a Saturday. Come dancing. All her boyfriends used to come and call. Why not come dancing? It's only natural. Another Saturday, another date. She would be ready, but she'd always make him wait. In the hallway, in anticipation. He didn't know the night would end up in frustration. He'd end up blowing all his wages for the week, or for a cuddle and a peck on the cheek. Come dancing, that's how they did it when
I don't know the actual, I don't know the chart position, but if I had to guess, I would say it was their highest charting song in America. Might be wrong about that. It's an amazing song. This record does not sound like a record from a British band. It sounds like somebody that was American in the early 80s. It's a really great record. They had some lineup changes here through this period of time. I don't remember exactly who left here. I want to think it's really only Ray and Dave left at this point from the main core. Because I know at one point, I think they had more members of Argent than they did from the original Kinks at some point here in the 80s.
Well, Mick Avery did play drums on this record, so he's still with them at that point. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So I know
but
they
you're
had
right.
a lot
there
of...
There were some other guys that came in on bass and keys on this record.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and that was a massive hit. It actually went to number... It was top 10 in America. That's how big it was.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that was their highest charting highest charting numbers.
So. I don't know about that.
I just looked it up, and I'm confirming it on billboard.com.
Right. Right.
All right. The best I can figure out very quickly here and I'm is that Come Dancing peaked at number 6,
mm-hmm.
and that tied their best previous chart... charting single, which
Lola.
Was no, not Lola. Mm. Lola was I want to say it was like 9.
Mm.
Their previous number 6 was Tired of Waiting for You.
Really?
But to go from 1965 to 1982, right, with all that material in between,
and still
come back. Be able to have that kind of success is something. Come Dancing was huge with MTV, of course.
Oh gosh, Ray and that mustache.
I think it's a wonderful song, just lyrically. Yeah. Like if you listen to it, it's a story song, but it there's a lot of real like sort of emotion and depth in that song.
Hell yeah,
and, exactly.
And for any song to be a hit on MTV among the youths, and be referencing like swing dancing and big bands and stuff like that.
Pretty amazing.
That's kind of a feat unto itself, right?
Well, and I'm not sure if it has anything to do with like his real life, but I mean, he talks about like his sister, you know, going dancing, and you know, who knows, maybe it was a family member that he was actually like writing about. I don't know. I have no idea, but it feels like it's a very personal song, but it is a 3-some-minute pop song that is just a gem.
It is, and I want to say this one other thing too, about it too. It came out around the same time as Springsteen's Atlantic City.
Yep.
And I think of these two songs similarly in the sense of like things from the past sort of being torn apart, right? So they blew up the Chicken Man late last night, right? This one,
right.
They put a parking lot on a piece of land where the supermarket used to stand. Before that, they put up a bowling alley on the site that used to be the local Pally, right?
Great point,
it's like
Jim.
Exactly. The idea of like this one plot of land, it just keeps sort of being torn down and built up and torn down and built up, right, into different things. And it used to be great, and it sort of diminished over time to the point now where they're not putting anything there. It's just a parking lot.
That's right.
Like,
yeah,
so what's the worst use of land you could have, right? A parking lot, right?
Yep. And that was the 80s, right?
Right.
People were tearing things down left and right in the 80s for, you know, better, for good, whatever. They're tearing down old things. And that's, I mean, they basically, again, if they're not American, I would not, if I didn't know they were British, I would not believe that they were an American band, because they're speaking for the American person.
I think the Pally gives it away.
Yeah,
totally. I agree. Yeah, especially the pronunciation of Pally instead of Calais. Correct. I get it. Yeah. All right. So
okay, let's move on.
State of Fusion. So the last record they released for Arista was 1984's Word of Mouth.
Yep.
This is one that I actually have spent the least amount of time with. Again, I only discovered these records in the last 7 months. I kind of went through chronologically. So I would buy what I found. Mm-hmm. I would listen to that. And I did not listen to the next one until I found it at a store. I only ordered maybe two online. I think I got Schoolboys in Disgrace online. I got maybe one or two others online. But I was attempting to basically, it sounds stupid, I'm a weirdo, but I tried to act like I was buying these in like real time and listen to them in real time versus streaming them. I mean, everything is available. I stream a whole bunch, but I wanted to kind of do this kind of organically. So this is one of the last ones that I bought. I bought a few others after this, and I've spent a whole lot, a lot less time with this. So I don't have a whole lot to say about this. I do enjoy Do It Again. We talked about the Who. I think if there is a song that sounds like The Who by The Kinks, it's Do It Again. They kind of channeled their inner Who. Go back to Kiss. If you listen to the title track, Word of Mouth, this could be a late 70s Gene Simmons Kiss song.
Call me.
And it's so good. Good Day is good. Living on a Thin Line is probably the best song on the record. I really like that. And then Missing Persons, it's heartbreaking. I mean, it's a song, you know, back in the 80s, it seemed like everybody was like disappearing. All these kids were disappearing. They're on milk cartons. And, you know, they write this heartbreaking song in 84, but kind of turn it into a somewhat pop, you know, slow pop song. So I don't know if you guys have much more about this one. I was 10 when this came out, and I didn't know any of these songs until I listened to this for the first time just a couple months ago when I bought it on Vine.
But Scott, let me ask you this. Like, what do you think it is or was or, you know, could be about Ray Davies that he was able to adapt during so many different eras and write these songs that, you know, like we talked about, sounded American or sounded English and, you know, at times were power pop and like invented stuff. Like, what do you think it was or is about him that makes him so special?
I mean, obviously I don't know, but I'm going to say he might be the greatest living songwriter of all time.
Maybe.
This guy, he just knows how to write an amazing pop song. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what era it is. It doesn't matter what he's writing about. He knows how to put words to paper and those words to song to make you feel something. And I had never again, I didn't listen to the Kinks until I heard you say Muswell Hillbillies. And I listened to that the first time and started buying these records this year. And I don't know for sure, but I'm telling you what, he has changed my life. His songwriting has changed my life. It's amazing. I love it. I can't even describe another songwriter that I can put on top of him. I think he is on par with Lennon, with McCartney, with Jagger and Richards. He is up there with all of those guys that people put way above him and those bands way above the Kinks. And I'm going to say it right now. The Kinks, in my opinion, they're my favorite band. I love them.
Wow.
That's a good band to be your favorite.
That's a pretty good argument, too. Yeah. I mean, you could definitely put them up there. You could make that argument.
Yeah.
You really could.
They're one of those bands that will just, I think, constantly like surprise and delight you.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
The more you sort of peel the layers, the sort of more you get out of it, right?
And even their quote unquote bad records are better than other people's mediocre records.
Right. That's right.
That may be the best sign. Yeah.
Yeah, you look at 1993's Phobia. I love that record, and it got panned. It got panned.
Totally, man.
But it's a great record. The only one that I could probably live without is UK Jive. It's not good. But it's still, if you look at what people were putting out that were from the 60s, they were putting out in the late 80s, it's still not a horrible record.
No, not at all.
It's still listenable. There's some really good songs on there. I really hope that he and Dave are actually recording and do release something, because you would assume following that would be a tour. Talk about the Kinks. I actually got a bootleg of his of Dave's unreleased 69 record, I think, that's going to be released in this Arthur box set.
Sweet.
And it's amazing. So, but I hope to see them. I hope to see, you know, either of them solo or them as a band together at some point here in the near future, hopefully.
Well, I think, Scott, you might have set like 10 more people off on the same Kinks trail. So
yeah, I hope
that works. Yeah, man.
You guys set me off on my trail. I'll tell you that. And right. I hope I can do the same. You know, I did that hopefully with Melina. I've got some more things that I want to talk about here on future episodes. So I'm going to keep on being a patron and talk to you every few months.
You're always welcome, man.
That sounds great. All right. And some records are on the way for you, too. Thanks very much, Scott, for your time. And thanks for bringing this
to us.
And I completely am on board with this. I think it's a fantastic period of a band that at this point in their career probably should have just been putting out, you know, it should have just been sort of riding out their fame from earlier, right?
Oh,
and they weren't.
Exactly.
They had a resurgence, and they kind of reinvented themselves in a good way, right? An authentic way.
The opposite of resting on your laurels.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally. The opposite of that.
Totally. And it's very exciting period for this band, I think. So, all right. All right. Thanks very much. And we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. And if anyone else would like to be like Scott, be on the show.
We'd love it.
Yeah. So check out Patreon, patreon.com/suburbspod. Mm-hmm. You can see how that all works there. All right. We'll talk to you later, Scott. And this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to everyone else later.
Later.
All the stories have been told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to matter very much anymore. All the lies we were told, all the lives of the people running round their castles are burned. Our eyes see change, but inside we're the same as we ever were. Living on a thin line. Ooh, tell me now, what are we supposed to do? Living on a thin line. Ooh, tell me now, what are we supposed to do? Living on a thin line. Living this way each day's a dream.
You know what? If you guys did even half as good as you did last time, I'm sure I'll love them. Right. So
that's the kind of standard I like.
All right. It's kind of the motto of the show, isn't it? Every day is half as good as the one before.